All right, good morning. Kathy, you do the Pledge of Allegiance, if you don't. Good morning. Let's begin with our invocation. It is my pleasure to introduce Bishop Bernard LaMarche of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Bishop LaMarche presides over a congregation of 340 members in the Dallas region. Bishop and his wife, Heidi, are the proud parents of six children. And thank you, Bishop, for being here. And please lead us in prayer.
Father, as we gather today at this meeting, we take a moment to bow our heads, to pause, and reflect on this great nation in which we live in. The great leaders we have this state, the great leaders we have here in Dallas. Father, today as we convene this meeting, we pray Thou be with us, that we may peaceably consider those issues before us. We're grateful again and give thanks to Thee and offer this prayer in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen. Mr. Cadane? Thank you. Let me, first of all, welcome everybody here. We have a lot that's been going on. Saturday was a wonderful day. We kicked off our Mayor's Youth Fitness Initiative, MyFi, and we had hundreds of kids here at City Hall. Miss Alonzo and Miss Medrano were there, and I think they saw the excitement that getting our kids healthy is a huge priority in there. It's also we'll make them better students, and DISD is a critical in making that happen. I just wanted my fact for the day is we've got over 19,000 volunteers already working with DISD, so we've got a lot of folks working, and I think it's a community experience. Let me talk a little bit about housekeeping. We, with the crowd that is here today, we're trying to kind of work on the fly to accommodate everybody in the same room, but I think it's going to be difficult. We're trying to kind of maybe move over to the main chambers, but because of technical issues and trying to get recording devices and all that, it's going to be impossible to do that. So what we'll do is we'll proceed with the open microphone speakers and ask, I think there's some folks that will move some folks in and out as appropriate. We always appreciate everybody's attendance. We've had a lot of people through redistricting speak to us in all the communities, and so I welcome you folks that have not spoken yet to the council. With that, Ms. Rios, why don't we begin with the open microphone?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We're going to begin your morning speakers with Ernestine Anderson, followed by Elliot Navarro. I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals will be allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice a timer on both walls. When the timer turns to zero, please stop speaking and allow the next individual their turn. You will address your comments to Mayor Rawley. Again, your first speaker is Ernestine Anderson. Not present. Elliot Navarro. Sir, if you'll please step up to the podium on this side.
Good morning, Mr. Anderson.
Good morning.
If you'll please state your name and address for the record.
My name is Elliot Navarro, and I live at 2542 Bahama Drive. It's Oak Cliff. Okay. First, I want to thank the Honorable Mayor and all the City Council persons for letting me address.
really believe in participating in democracy, and I appreciate it very much. I want to start off by saying that I come here in the spirit of being positive. I think that something can be worked out with this redistricting. I'm not going to sit back, and I'm going to tell you up front that I support Plan 16. And one of the things that I hope that is repeated over and over, that we need a plan whose effect cannot dilute racial, ethnic, and language minorities. Okay? And as of right now, the statistics are that Hispanics make up 42% of the population with a voting age of 37%, and we have four districts. There are six white minority districts with a voting age of 37% and a total population of 29%. I hope that there is a spirit of trying to work something out. You know, I'm not the type of person that jumps and threatens and does that kind of thing. The main reason I want to see something worked out is that if this goes into a legal court, if this goes into that type of action, spirit of non-compromise, what I've heard figures thrown around that it's going to cost between $1 and $4 million of legal action. And right now, there's a need in other programs, other activities, and that's why I'm really hoping that we can work something out very quickly, because I know my time is running out. I recently retired after 26 and a half years in the juvenile department, and you can just imagine, you can meet a lot of people with attitude, young and old, but I was always able to take the most angry, the most divisive type of people, and I didn't always succeed, but we got closer and closer. So I do hope that something can be worked out. I have the utmost confidence that the council and the mayor, that you have the capability to work something out. So please, please, as you can see, there's a lot of interest here, all these people here. And so that's basically what I'd like to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Navarro.
Your next speaker is Marcina Alvarado. Again, please state your name and address for the record.
Mr. Mayor, members of the City Council, my name is Marcina Alvarado. I live at 2726 Burlington Boulevard. I am a longtime leader of District 1, having lived there since 1984. In the 27 years that I have lived here, I have never felt compelled to come before you. But today, I am here to speak to you about the redistricting plan, which I have been following since the maps were made available. I have seen two or three that offer a fair distribution that reflect accurately the racial population of our city. The recently approved map fragments the Latino population, and it presents an obstacle for fair representation of Latinos. This challenges the voting process and will almost always be challenged in federal court, wasting our taxpayer dollars. I have attended town hall meetings where I have heard stories of painful budget cuts. As both a Latina and a taxpayer, I ask, is this reasonable, wise to waste precious resources on such an unfair process? Since we are experiencing budget cuts, I am sorely disappointed that in year 2011, you have let us down by approving such an unjust plan. You, who are supposed to be representing our communities for a common purpose, have let us down by creating such a divisive plan that will waste taxpayer dollars, our dollars. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next speaker is Steve L. Mathers. Steve Mathers? Not present. Hector Flores?
Good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Good morning.
City Council people, members, thank you for allowing us to be here and participate in this democratic process. My name is Hector Flores, and I represent the Latino Redistrict Coalition and a former national president of LULAC. I am here today to discuss your decision to deny representation at the Horseshoe to Latino residents of our beautiful city. The redistricting plan voted on 9-6 by the City Council is totally unacceptable to the Latino community. The lines diminishing our voting strength in District 1 is unacceptable and contrary to the Voting Rights Act. We are entitled to more representation on the City Council given our population in the city. We cannot retrogress. That plan retrogresses Latinos. Not since the days of slavery has anyone counted as less than one person. The 3-5 rule is an ugly reminder of our dark history in our country. The city of Dallas has changed dramatically from the battle days of 14-1. The white population has decreased by 65,526 to 345,205. Anglos represent 25.82% of the Dallas population, or only 4.03 districts. They should be majority white. The black population has gone down 5,183 to 299,634, and now are only 25.02% of the Dallas population, and 3.5 out of those 14 districts should be majority black. On the other hand, the Latino population, as you well know, has increased 84,665 to 507,309. Latinos are now 42.35% of the Dallas population, and 5.93 out of 14 districts should be majority Latinos. We're asking for 5.
That's right, yeah.
5 Latino, 4 black, 5 white should be the plan in order to achieve compliance with the Voting Rights Act.
That's right.
Latinos should be able to elect representatives of their choice. That is the American way. We want 5 Latino, 4 black, and 5 white districts. Bring black back, black Plan 16. The Voting Rights Act should apply to North Dallas also. 545, that's the right plan.
Thank you, Mr. Flores.
Your next speaker is Bill Betson.
Honorable Mayor, it is an honor to be before you again. As you know, my normal work is to prepare middle school students 10 years after middle school to answer the question, what would you do differently if you were 13 again? Now I got to sit here and look at the same question about what we have just endured. 7 months ago, we started this process. If we were back in March, what would we do differently about redistricting? I know I would do things differently. That is certain. We have learned a lot.
Would you ask the folks? I want to listen to Mr. Benson. I think it's important. Okay.
We have learned a lot in the last 7 months. But the most expensive lessons may be in front of us. with these multi-million dollar lawsuits. I hope they can be avoided. As you saw with the numbers that were just quoted, strictly speaking in redistricting, if we look at the majority in each district, it should be 4-4-6 based on pure population. And that really is the way we should redistrict. However, because our motto is 4-5-4 for the fact that many of 5-4-5 for the fact that basically when we go to the voting polls, many people can't vote, many people are very young, we have many, many, many children, and basically the numbers would probably come out 5-4-5. But you correct that in the voting booth, not in the redistricting table. Redistricting should give equal, compact districts based on total population. And then the correction is done in the voting booth, where it should be. The power of the vote needs to be underlined in our country. As people come of age, as people gain citizenship, then the voting numbers continue to change, and the redistricting numbers may match the voting numbers. That has not yet happened. That will not happen if we redistricted properly. I hope the difference is clear. In other words, redistricting is one thing. The voting booth is another. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Benson. Thank you.
Thank you. Your next speaker is Sandra Crenshaw. Not present. Myron Young, not present. Robert E. Jones, not present. Sterling McCoy, not present. Charles Goodrum, not present. That concludes the speakers this morning, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. I want to also recognize the redistricting commissioners that are here. I just see Mr. Garcia, I think. Thank you, Domingo, for your hard work and your leadership through this process. It's very important, so thank you very much for that as well. Were there any other commissioners here that I didn't recognize? Okay. They're outside? All right. Well, tell them thank you for me. And let it be noted that we recognize the multitude of people that want to be here this morning, and we heard them loud and clear. And thank you for your words of wisdom this morning. Thank you. Ms. Hassel?
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to say personally thank you all for getting up early and coming down to show that the Latino community does speak. It was said at one point. It was said at one point during this whole process that, well, where were the Latinos? Well, we're here, and we are 42% of the population. And if you want to talk about, if you want to talk about citizen voting age, which was another thing that was brought up during these discussions. You know, if you're not going to count someone as a citizen, then don't let them pay taxes. This is all about representation, taxation and representation. That goes back to Civics 101. You are taxed, you should be represented. So if you want to count citizen voting age, then give them a card where they don't have to pay sales tax. So again, thank you very much for being here and letting people know we have about another 100 people in the flag room who are very concerned about this. We have an opportunity, colleagues, to make this right and to stop being in national news talking about diluting 42% of the population here in the city of Dallas. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you. City Council, we're going to consider appointments and boards and commissions at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That is item number one on your agenda. Nominated for individual appointment to the South Dallas Fair Park Trust Fund Board is Jeffrey Jeff Sullivan, nominated by Councilmember Cadane for the Business Owner and SDF Area category. Your full council appointment nominees to the Civil Service Board is Albert T. Turner, nominated by Councilmember Cadane. Nominated by Mayor Rawlings to the Police and Fire Pension Board.
Hold, Ms. Fields. Okay, good. Thank you. All right.
Thank you. Nominated to the Police and Fire Pension Board by Mayor Rawlings are Jerry Allen, Delia DiHasso, and Chaffee Cadane. Those are all council members. Those are the nominees for your consideration.
Do we have a motion? Do we have a second? Ms. Coop, second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is carried. Thank you. We will now, with Ms. Hill here, we will now go downstairs as a group. No going to the bathroom or stopping any place, okay? Right out to the... What? No. Where's Dwayne go?
He's around.
Okay. We're going out the front. We need to take another group photo, okay? And then we will come right back, okay, to here. So let's... Well, I don't even think it's recess. It's not recess. So we'll just, it's on the agenda. So we'll go out there and do it and come right back. Thank you. All right, I think we've got a quorum. So why don't we go to the next posted agenda item? Get us all around here. Thank you. So our first briefing will be on the 2012 city calendar. Ms. Soon? Jean, are you doing this? Thank you.
So I won't go through the entire presentation. We're using the same committee schedule that we recently adopted based on revised city council committees. And the only major change from the current year calendar is to push up the budget adoption by 1 week to accommodate the request from the Dallas County Tax Office so that they can process the tax bills and mail them out on October 1st. But for the most part, the calendar remains same as prior fiscal year or prior calendar year. So I can just take any questions that you have at this point. There will be an item on next Wednesday's addendum to approve the calendar.
You know, while we're on this subject, if there's any opinions on how we're doing council meetings, anything, you know, this is probably a good time to talk about that. I mean, it doesn't have anything directly to do with the calendar necessarily, but okay. Yes, Linda. Ms. Coop.
Do you want to put in our retreat, or if we're going to have a retreat next year? The only reason I say that is because sometimes we schedule it late and people have already made their plans and stuff, and I just don't see it in here. And maybe I'm just missing it.
There's not one on this calendar, right. But we can definitely add it if you have a date.
Let's go ahead and do that.
I don't have a date, but I just what might work is to find a date, not for today's vote, but to find a date and somehow or another let council members know that looks like the probable date, so we go ahead and mark that on our calendar.
That's a really good idea, because we need to look at TML, NLC, and all those things that happen in the fall. So we'll try to, by the first of the year, have you a set date for a retreat.
And then if we're opening up anything, well, the Colorado Bridge and so on and so forth, did you reconcile that with the calendar?
Yes, but I don't think we'll put it on the calendar, because if you change it, you have to vote, so.
No, I understand that. It wasn't something on the calendar.
Right.
That was in conflict with
right.
that. Can't think of anything.
It's the 3rd of March, and we haven't got a problem there.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay, Ms. Hunt.
Thank you, Mayor. Do we have the Quality of Life Committee set at 9 or 9:30 on the calendar?
On the calendar, they're at 9 o'clock.
Okay, I'm going to make a motion, colleagues, to change that to 9:30 a.m. because I've talked with all the members and that was the preference.
Okay. All right. Ms. Medrano?
Would that, Ms. Hunt, would that change the time that your committee would end? It would go from 9:30 to 10:30 as opposed to
9:30 to 11.
Oh, okay. That's my question. And then, Mayor, I just wanted to say that the hour and a half, at least for public safety, has done really well. It seems like we're more focused and more just more consent agenda, and I think the hour and a half did well.
Great. Yes, Ms. Margolin.
Since the Arts, Culture, and Library Committee right now is only meeting once a month, I'm going to be certainly after, well, in November and then again in the new year, adding a couple of other dates that will be used specifically for field trips out to our cultural facilities. And I'm going to notify all council members when we do that because certainly everybody is invited if you're available.
Excellent. Any other questions? All right. Thank you, Jean.
Okay.
Next, there will be Complete Streets. Teresa O'Donnell.
Good morning. Well, I wanted to update the council a little bit about our Complete Streets projects. I know many of you are already very familiar with this project, but I thought it'd be a good time to just something we kicked off in the spring, something to kind of refresh everybody's memory and let you know where we are right now. There's been a lot of discussion in Dallas over the past 5 years about Complete Streets. We actually started talking about this in 2006 when we approved Forward Dallas. At that time,
could you just speak up just a little louder or put that mic closer to you? Thank you.
Got this. Okay, is this better? People usually don't have a hard time hearing me. So, anyway, the kind of sentiment in the community when we did Forest Dallas was kind of lukewarm, kind of tepid, I would say. But then last year when we started working on our bike plan, that energy really started to get mobilized. The work with the Better Blocks folks has really kind of engaged these new young professionals in the internet crowd. We've had some recent work with some CIP projects. Greenville Avenue is under construction, Bishops. We've got some interesting stuff going on. Some private developers in the last 4 or 5 years have tried different things with varying degrees of success. But, so we really thought it was a good time to go ahead and really have a comprehensive, Luanne, if you will, approach to Complete Streets because it's been on an almost ad hoc project-by-project basis so far. So that's the purpose of the presentation today is to talk to you about this project, the approach to the project because it's a little bit different, talk about some pilot design projects, and then talk about our public involvement plan. Because we have this new energy, we've tried our public involvement in a different way, engaging the Better Block guys, doing some surveying, and doing some demonstration projects. We also did a public value survey, and all of that is in your appendix for you to go through at your leisure. But what it does show is that there is a growing kind of appreciation for this. I think it kind of fits right in with healthy neighborhoods and healthy kids and the mayor's initiative for healthy youth, you know, give people more opportunities to bike and walk. And so we'll review that a little bit. As many of you know, we're very successful in doing this project without spending any of our own money. So that's always a good thing. This is a federal grant that the RTC gave us some money to match. We do think, just like our bike plan, the RTC will be using this as a model for other communities in our region. We are kind of leading the way in the region about this. It is a $795,000 project, and for those of you interested, it is Transportation and Community and System Preservation Funds through the federal government that TxDOT actually made available to us, and the match was with the RTR funds. When we started this, we wanted to look at some basic principles. One is that street design really is relevant for all modes of transportation. For years and years, we're an auto-centric city. Most people still drive, and for years and years, we thought the only purpose for streets was to move as many cars as fast as possible from one location to the other. And now there's a growing realization that streets are for bicycles, and they're for pedestrians, and they're for their transit, as well as automobiles, and that our design should reflect that. And what we need in order to implement that, really, is greater flexibility. Dallas is pretty much a built-out city. Our right-of-way is about where it's going to be, so how can we be more flexible in the use of that existing right-of-way and enhance the street as a place other than just as a conduit for transportation? And then also look at green streets. You know, in an urban situation, Luria, in an urban situation, streets convey a lot of stormwater. And so we need to be able to use that. In this project, please go back one. In this project, we need to, we want to look at a broad range of streets, from mixed-use streets like we have in Uptown to more commercial streets like in Casa Linda, to very residential streets. This is a Swiss Avenue. And then urban residential like we see in St. Thomas and Uptown. And so we're looking at a broad range. Of course, this is an idealized street where you have all the different kind of facets in it. You've got wide sidewalks and opportunities for cafes and outdoor dining, bicycles, landscaping, on-street parking. This isn't going to occur on all streets. Some streets might have one or two of these elements. Some streets might have all of them. But there'll be a range, a different range, as it's appropriate to the context and to the neighborhood and what the users actually want to see. Okay. And then again, stormwater management is a growing concern in urban areas. We're working on an ISWIM implementation plan right now. The federal government is supposed to come out with some new stormwater quality standards sometime in the next few months. And while these are small solutions, they really can contribute to controlling the quantity and the quality of runoff in our urban environment. And so this is a place where a small solution can make a really big difference. So, we have some initial assumptions going into this project. One is these streets aren't appropriate everywhere. There are some areas of town that are really eager and hungry for these types of streets. There are other parts of town that there are very suburban or rural in nature still, and they may not be appropriate. So we wanted to make sure that we are in an appropriate context. Given that it is a shifting mindset, it is a new kind of young professional interest that seems to be growing in its attraction. The other initial assumption is that there's going to be more costs and more maintenance for these new streets. Now, it could be as simple as strapping a bike lane if there are not additional improvements. If it's not additional right-of-way, that cost could be as low as $1,500 a mile. But if we're talking about new right-of-way, new construction, new amenities, those could be significant. So, and there are a number of ways to share those costs and maintain those costs over time. The objectives of this study are to look at the process and the policies of how to do this. We have been doing it on an ad hoc basis, and sometimes that goes smoothly and it's successful, and sometimes there's a lot of hiccups. I know one of the first ones we tried to do was in the urban reserve. It was very difficult for the engineers to kind of figure out how we manage something like this. So set up some processes and some policies and some standards so that we're not reinventing the wheel every single time and we can make it smoother. And then understand what the trade-offs are, the costs and the benefits, and in terms of transitioning these streets. We also want to make sure that we have a phased and systematic approach for the implementation and that we go ahead and coordinate with the 2012 bond program. There are currently about 50 CIP projects right now that have at least some phase of a complete street element to them, whether it's a bike facility or streetscaping or on-street parking, or just improved pedestrian amenities. So we want to make sure that we're doing this in a systematic way so that people understand and we can calibrate those expectations. Again, The key here is more flexible use of the existing public right-of-way. In most cases, we're not going to be in the position to acquire more right-of-way, whether it's the cost or the improvements are already there and the property owners don't want to dedicate more right-of-way. The city really hates to ever condemn right-of-way, so the focus mainly is to look for opportunities where they exist. And then ensure the more sustainable and long-term funding strategies. There's a lot of ways these can be done through PIDs, through TIFs, just through private agreements. What we found in Bishop Arts a lot of times is they're not looking for TIF money. They just want to be able to use the sidewalk for a cafe. They just want to be able to put an awning out. They want to make something. They want to make a place there. So we think this can be a great incentive for new development. So the question really becomes, in this, what's the public's responsibility and what's the private? And how much of this can we allow on private property? If we really are working within constrained budgets, you know, can we ask the property owner to provide a lot of these amenities as opposed to the public? And so that's one of the big questions that this will be exploring. And again, it really is just about sharing space. And it doesn't have to be, in Dallas we like to do things kind of, this is the valet spot and it'll always be the valet spot. Well, we can share that space. Maybe it can be on-street parking when the valets don't need it, valet during high peak, cafes can pop up. You know, it could be a shared space as opposed to something dedicated all the time. This really allows this new energy for outdoor seating and parking and to operationalize these streets, get more vibrant streets, share that space. This really is the kind of thing that puts us up there with Portland and Seattle and more of our urban cities where people are outside. Okay, so those are the concepts. The what will actually be produced out of this project at the end of the day is the map and the design manual and then this implementation strategy about where these appropriate projects are and how we can implement them, and as much as possible coordinate them with the 2012 bond program. And so you'll see that we're going to talk about that a little bit more. The pilot project designs themselves, these are just conceptual designs. These won't be a set of engineered drawings. It'll be the conceptual designs, and then the actual design and the implementation money will be funded through the CIP project. We do have some money for some temporary installations, a couple of those, and we'll do about 7 workshops around these different project areas so that people can really see and understand what it is we're proposing and make sure that they think it's appropriate for their neighborhood. Go ahead, Miranda. This is timely now because we will, I think, as the city staff will be bringing the council very soon the planning efforts for the 2012. So we want to be able to link all these efforts together, to link it with the ground that we covered on the bike plan, and the tool design is a part of this consultant team, and then look at additional roadway improvements. Okay, so I believe we've been around to talk to each of you about this kind of list of proposed projects. Now, we're going in with no preconceived notions. We talked to you all. We talked to some of your constituents. We talked to some developers because we're really looking at areas where we could have the best bang for our buck, whether it's through a public initiative or a private initiative. What areas of town, and these are the ones that came up, of course, Davis, and the chamber was very in favor of that as a key street over there, Ross Avenue from Pearl down to Greenville. Henderson, there's been some interest by the PID there, always a very active street in Dallas. Fort Worth Avenue, a lot of really good work already going on over there. Lancaster, that's an interesting road. It's got some transit opportunity that's not quite working because that transit's in the middle of the road. So how can we take a real hard look at that and make that more successful? Buckner, there's a DART station there, and Eastfield has a satellite, so that has some opportunity. Royal Lane, Asian Trade District, another good opportunity. Grand Avenue, it'll be a site for one of our Better Block demonstrations. Camp Wisdom, that's a challenge because it's a very underutilized road, but it still has lots of opportunity. North Cliff. This is a great recommendation from Councilmember Cadane up in the Lake Islands neighborhood, with a lot of energy from that neighborhood wanting to come across to the lake. Skillman, of course, a lot of really good efforts going on Skillman and Lake Highlands to the town center. Lots of redevelopment opportunity there. That project kind of got stalled by the economy, but they certainly are going strong. Alpha Road, there's a kind of a private initiative that's going to help that. Park Lane, and then Meadow Creek, a very interesting phase up in North Dallas from Arapahoe down to Campbell. So these are the ones that we want to look at, the conceptual designs, work with the neighborhoods, have workshops out there, get feedback, get input about how can these help our neighborhoods? What is it that the community would like to see? So what we've done so far in terms of public engagement is built a website, we have a Facebook page, we had our Butterbox kickoff back in June when it was just unmercifully hot down in the Arts District. And I'll go through these a little bit more in depth. Visual essay contest. We've had these in-depth stakeholder interviews and the public surveys. We've got our technical committee up and meeting, started meeting last week, and these community group workshops that will be around those pilot projects, and some citywide open houses as well. We really wanted to do a very broad and different type of outreach this year, because we think that the community that we're trying to engage, not just the folks that are typical City Hall stakeholders, the ones that will come and be on the stakeholder committee for 12, 18 months and show up at a public hearing. These are folks that really want to be out, they want to be involved, they want to be engaged, they want to have dialogue and participation in different types of ways. So our consultant team is led by Kimley Horn, they're transportation planners, but we've already also engaged the Better Block guys and Tool Design, who are the lead on the bike plan. And their participation so far has been just invaluable. So that's been fabulous. As I said, the kickoff in June was very hot but well attended. We got our kind of different users out. We did kind of stole an idea from the Parks Department. Go ahead, Luann, and did a visual essay contest. So to ask citizens, can you go to the next slide? Thank you. Ask citizens, what are their favorite streets in Dallas? What should we be emulating? What should we be doing more of? We're also working with Big Thought to get school kids engaged in this. Kind of an interesting idea, how kids experience streets and what they need about streets, what could encourage them to walk more in their neighborhoods and bike more, that kind of thing. We're also going to do some community focus groups or a technical committee, our engineers, outside engineers, people that are actually building these streets and understand some of the challenges and what it is, the kinks that we need to work out. We've also asked some of our developers in the community that have been doing this kind of thing, like Mr. Pankey and the fellows up in Uptown. I'm sorry, my names escape me at the moment, that have actually worked and tried some of these. One of our developers had tried reverse angle parking a couple of years ago, and he was unable to lease the space for 2 years because the clients just didn't understand it. And so now he wants to pull it back out. So we really want to talk to people that have done this. And what is it that needs to happen? And in that particular instance, it was just one block. So maybe, you know, this should be approached on more than a one-block basis. So real professionals with relevant experience in this, kind of leading our thought processes on that. We, again, will have community focus groups and work sessions around these project areas to make sure that we're doing what the citizens would like us to do. We're looking at residential community representatives, so the residential folks, what are they looking to see? The user advocacy groups, the bike groups, what are they looking to see? And then people that have a stake in the area around some of these project designs. So those will all be great ways to involve the community. Go ahead, Luann. We'll do 7 citywide workshops. We'll do a Better Block event over on Grand Avenue, and then we've got some money for temporary installations at least 2 of these locations, and those will be decided over the course of this. Go ahead. We also did a public values survey just because we know we have some people that really want this. We know we have people that are kind of, well, indifferent about it. We know we have people that think that the streets are fine just like they are. So we did a scientifically valid survey with a professional surveying group and conducted in-depth interviews and also these random interviews, and it was calibrated for race, income, gender, in terms of everything. And what we found was that there's a growing appreciation for streets. Go ahead, Lorraine. It's still not it's widespread, but there's a growing appreciation for this, especially if you're talking about pedestrian safety, opportunities for kids, opportunities for people to spend, families to spend time together outside walking, biking, enjoying the environment. 90% of folks, we still drive, we're still a very driving city. Most people still drive, but for reasons of safety or health or the economy or gas, they're starting to change their ideas about the streets. So that's good. 60% of the surveyors, people that were surveyed, said they walk in their neighborhood at least once a week, bike, and 85%, this was surprisingly high in my mind, 85% said that they would be in favor of dedicating some portion, albeit very small, of the existing street for a non-car purpose. So if I could have a wider sidewalk or if I could have a bike lane, 85% of the people surveyed said that would be okay with them. And they would even accept an increase in their commute time. So I'd give up part of my street, and if it took me another 5 or 10 minutes to get to work, that'd be okay if I had an opportunity to walk or bike in my neighborhood. So we felt that was very a very interesting finding. Most respondents are satisfied. This, I think, reflects about 65% satisfied with street conditions. We know we've got a lot more work to do on our streets, but I think that ranks pretty consistently with the other surveying the city has done. Highest priorities include pedestrian safety. People are worried. I know I get worried. I live in a part of town where there's a lot of bikes, and I get worried about people on bikes, especially kids on bikes. Street lighting, again, people care about the street lighting, and people really care about maintaining the infrastructure that we already have. May not be interested in building new infrastructure, but everybody wants to, maintain that investment that we already have in streets. So that was good to good reinforcement. The schedule for this study is, as you know, we kicked it off last spring. A lot of good work has already been going on. Technical committee started meeting last week. By the end of this month, we'll start our community focus group sessions. In November, we're thinking about our next Better Block event. The technical committees will continue meeting through the winter, and then by the next spring, we should be wrapping this up with one giant big citywide open house. I think with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. You have in your appendix all the public values survey information if you'd like to go through any of that at your leisure, or we could answer questions. But with that, I'll take questions, Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Caraway.
Thank you, Mayor. And Teresa, thank you. And Mayor, you got the pencil.
I'll be very quick.
Okay.
Arizona, not Arizona. Not the state, Arizona Street, between Saina and McVeigh. It is absolutely it's a short fix, no sidewalks, it's heavy, heavy Hispanic, and they literally have to get out during the bad weather and get into the mud just to get in the house. And you have to drive both ends on Center Road. That street must be fixed. Arizona from Saina to McVeigh, just a little short piece. Also, Sunnyvale from Overton in District 4 all the way, Ms. Hill, through District 5 to Leadbetter. The Sunnyvale Street, that entire street has to be fixed, and these are just two that I would ask we look at immediately. Then if we would go to page 11 and 12, and Mayor, this one is one that I'll just say, that when we talk about the sidewalk cafes and mm-hmm. things of that nature, and I'm just going to throw this over to the mayor and to the council so you all can hear it from me. I would just love to close Main Street at some point. And we close Main Street down from vehicular traffic. And even if we dug it up and put the water there and put the sidewalks out, we can start competing with San Antonio and do our own little river walk for that pedestrian way. Sounds crazy, but it's not. We need to do something that would extend those sidewalks out where the Jewel Hotel and all that activity is going and create that type of tourism traffic with the great things that we're doing now. I think it's something we can look forward to in the future. Jeff, it's all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Davis.
Thank you, Mayor. I just want to talk about Ms. O'Donnell had a list of streets on her presentation, and one of them was Grand Avenue. And there was a reason I selected Grand Avenue. Let me say that MLK will be, because we're doing the bridge, the City Crest Bridge, this weekend, a new design with the City Crest Bridge. And we've had focus groups on Martin Luther King last year. And we're going to be putting Martin Luther King on an upcoming bond package because it's going to take a lot to do. And the reason I selected Grand Mayor is there's a couple things that's happening on Grand Avenue, and I just kind of laid out the map here. We're talking about the new Billy Day Middle School. Jill and her staff and DISD, we met to talk about to see if somehow we can make that development a part of a complete street. We still have some meetings that we're going to have to continue to meet with them on to see if they can do the wider sidewalks and look at some of the things you're talking about when you talk about complete streets. The other thing is at Grand and Macamex, we got the new housing development. We've done two of those houses. The housing department is going to finish those zero lot line houses, and so that's going to be happening. We're going to have a new development across the street from that Good Luck, and that's going to be brownstone. Then you got the Baylor. Then you have the post office. Then Grand Plaza, Saturday, well, they're not this Saturday, but they're going to be working on a complete street around Grand Plaza Avenue, around Grand Plaza Shopping Center. Then we're looking at the new TOD from Trump, which is the Hall TOD, and so that will start in phases. And the one reason I thought Grand Plaza Grand Avenue was ready to be a complete street because it's wide enough for lights, wider sidewalks, new banners, new landscaping, and it's in a TIF district.
Excellent example.
So that's one of the reasons. And so if anybody is listening to this, that's why Grand was selected, knowing that we're still going to work on MLK, but because we have a lot of things that we have to do on MLK, I'm looking for future bond proceeds to do some of the things on MLK. But I think right now, because of the new day school, and this school is going to go from Macamex all the way down to Good Ladder, and the amount of money they're putting into that development, and I think it'll spearhead from Good Latimer all the way into Fair Park on some of the things we're doing. So
yes,
that's why the complete
excellent, excellent partnership. It's a great candidate.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hustle.
Thank you, Mayor. Very glad to see this presentation. You know, my folks have been on this for about 3 years now. At least the community in around the Bishop Arts District. You talked about flexible use of right-of-way. That has been one of the biggest roadblocks that we've had in trying to do cafe seating, awning, basically to make our streets more walkable and livable. Our current guidelines on use of right-of-way are very detrimental. So I assume we're going to be working on that.
Yes,
or will you be doing it by project by project?
No, and that's why we thought this comprehensive approach was so necessary, because of those obstacles and those roadblocks, and we have to now go in and do them one at a time. And this will give us a framework to go forward in a more logical, comprehensive way.
So you're doing them project by project or one at a time, is that what you're saying?
Now they are.
Okay.
That's what we're trying to shift away from.
You're trying to shift away from that?
Yes.
Okay. And then I heard you say you would be integrating the pilot design projects into the bond projects, and there are 50 of those?
Well, right now, in the old bond program, there's about 50 CIP projects right now that are incorporating some element, not all, but some elements. But as we go forward in the 2012 bond program, we really want to work with Streets and Public Works to make sure that we have this as a component, so it's not kind of an add-on later like we've had to do now.
That's very important. We've got to be sure that we start this from the beginning, not at the end, and say, oh, yeah, we have complete streets. You know,
yes, ma'am.
It needs to be wide sidewalks. So that's very important to me. I think the maintenance of any of those amenities that we're talking about, planters, you know, additional trees, maintenance or plantings around the curb. We need to really think about that in the beginning and sign some MOUs with some neighborhood organizations or businesses so that we are getting those kinds of partnerships up front. You talked about temporary installations.
Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on when those will be decided?
Well, what I wanted to make sure that I was clear on, because I'm not sure we've been clear in the past, is this is a planning grant. This is money to do the technical manuals, the design manuals, do the planning. It's really not implementation money. We have set aside some implementation money for a couple of these temporary installations. We haven't picked those locations yet. So the real power in this is getting ready for the next bond program so that we're not going project by project.
And who will be involved in the decisions of a temporary installation?
I think it'll be the staff and the technical committee, and I'm sure we'll have council member input from that.
Who's the technical committee?
We can give you a list. It's the city's engineers and TxDOT engineers, the DART engineers. It's basically the engineering group. But I can give you a list if you'd like.
Yeah, I get real concerned when it's all engineers because of some technical problems there.
Sure.
I've already experienced.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to see something in the community realm on these technical committees so that, you know, you're not just hearing from engineers. You've got to hear from people who, you know, either have experienced it or who would like to see something different.
Right. And that's why we're having those workshops. We're having 7 workshops. We're having 2 big community. Yes, we absolutely are.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Hasso. Mr. Cadane?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Teresa, thank you for the briefing. Very good. On page 16, these proposed pilot designs.
Mm-hmm.
Aren't you in the process of actually doing these streets? Or are you just going to design them and let the neighborhood see what can happen? What's going on there?
We're going to, like up on Northcliff, what we'll do is we'll work with, I think you've already given us some names of some community leaders. I live up near there, so I see people walking. There's a lot of energy, a lot of activity. So we'll work with those neighborhood leaders and the community people. We'll have a workshop and say, okay, now if this street could be redesigned, conceptually, what would you like to see? And we'll take them through a process so that they'll understand what their choices are and what the trade-offs are, and then we'll actually come out of that workshop with a conceptual design that we can then give to the engineers so they can do a full-scale set of drawings and put on the bond program.
Okay, so what I'm hearing now also is that every complete street won't be the same.
That's right.
You'll have different.
That's right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I think that's going to be neat.
Mm-hmm.
That it's not just a stock complete street.
Right.
They'll all be according to the district. And then the community focus groups, who all will be invited to those meetings, and will it just be like you said, Northcliff? Just people in Northcliff will have a meeting, or are you going to have people all over the city meeting in one huge deal? How will you do that?
We hope to have 200 or 300 people at each of these workshops, like we did the Four Dallas workshops, where we have a lot of visual information, a lot of slides, a lot of, do you like this? Do you like this? Do you like this? And invite, especially up around White Rock Lake, there's so much interest in walking and biking and being outside. We feel like that'll be one of our most heavily attended workshops.
Yeah, there will be.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then as far as distance, on your complete streets, do you look at a certain amount? Because I'm looking at Ferguson Road, and I'm looking at that entire boulevard as being a complete street.
Right.
That's quite a bit of land. So how would you look at something like a Ferguson Road?
I think,
or a Garland Road?
Well, I think back to Ms. Hosso's point that if we have design manuals and standards and policies, that we don't have to design every section of every road, but we have templates. And we'll say, well, Ferguson, this makes sense on Ferguson. There's a lot of foot traffic on Ferguson, but there's a lot of churches on Ferguson, and so you have these big campuses where there's not a lot of activity for a long way. So Ferguson will be an interesting challenge. There's a lot of, around Highland, a lot of pedestrian activity. I know I've seen information on the news about disabled and handicapped people having a difficult time getting up, because a lot of those streets are still, you know, bar ditches without sidewalks. So that's a real challenge.
And we're looking at putting a future rec center up there.
Yes,
so
sir.
That would be a good spot. And then lastly, I'd like to tag on to what Dwayne was saying about Main Street. Ever since we were in Colorado and I went up and down the street with Linda, they've got a street there that they've done the same thing. No cars go on it. They've got two free buses that go up and down that street.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got, in the center of the street, you've got retail, you've got food vendors. On the sidewalks, you've got vendors. It's just a neat way to bring people to the city. And if that's a way to look at that street through complete streets, I'd love for you to have that in on what you all are looking at. That may be a way to go to look at it. Getting our rail going to Oak Cliff and through there and have that rail come right back up into that street would be unreal.
Mm-hmm.
I could bring a lot of folks to town.
Yes,
okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cadane. Ms. Hunt?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. First of all, you know how excited I am about Complete Street. I think this can really have the opportunity to transform our city, make us more pedestrian friendly, change our way of life. One of the concerns I have about the way we're going about it, though, is I worry that we're a little too plan heavy and not enough do oriented. And I love the public engagement. I think that's an important part of the process. But what I see us doing is having planning sessions and surveys and charrettes and more planning and then some public hearings and some meetings and then getting the technical people together, talking with DART. There's not enough just going out and doing. And some of the, you know, if we look at some other cities, New York's a great example, they go out and they do it. They do these, you know, they've done just a great job in their transportation department of just getting out there, trying some things, trying some complete streets, trying some, you know, bike lanes, trying some public plazas, pop-up parks. Let's see how they work. Let's do 90-day programs. And they aren't expensive. This isn't about costly infrastructure where we tear up a street and totally redo it. That's obviously very expensive. But, colleagues, what we can do is use, there are simple materials, reusable materials that we can use to try out bike lanes on streets, to try out public plazas, pop-up parks. We can do this relatively inexpensively without waiting for the 2012 bond program, because I think folks will lose interest. I think we have some neat momentum going because of the bike plan, but I think the public will lose interest if they don't see anything happening until 2014 or 2015 at the earliest. So I would prefer to see us, instead of focusing so much time and energy on planning and documenting and designing and surveying, towards trying to just get out there and let's just try it.
Mm-hmm.
sometimes we'll fail, and that's fine. We'll learn from those mistakes. But sometimes we'll, you know, hit a home run, and we'll have something, I think, that we can implement long term. So I really, that's something I want to look at in our quality of life committee, is how we can get some quick wins under our belt, do several 90-day demonstration projects, and just get that moving.
Mm-hmm.
Next point I want to make is to Delia's point. Delia, I couldn't agree with you more about the obstacles we place in front of businesses that want to create these amazing streetscapes. And we've made it so hard. We've made it so difficult for businesses to put out awnings or planters or outdoor seating, all of that. No, I like it, Mayor. Join in when you like. We can do this without cost to the city by simply revising our code.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty easy to do. So that's something else our committee is going to focus on. I welcome your input on that. To Sheffy's point about kind of wheeled trolleys, wheeled streetcars, that's a quick implementation of our long-term goal for in-street streetcars. And I think, you know, I was talking with Scott about this morning. It makes sense for us to move forward on that. In this economy, it's going to be challenging for us, I think, to get our entire streetcar line that we want into the ground. So instead of just kind of waiting again and planning, let's go ahead and let's get something going. I was talking with John Crawford in downtown Dallas about this. And so I think that there might be a way for us to connect downtown, to connect uptown and Oak Cliff together with a wheeled streetcar rather than you know, waiting. Let's still plan on the long term, but let's go ahead and get something out now. We can do that. I do want to talk about, do we have folks from streets, from transportation here? Okay. Because one of the things that I'd like to know from one of you guys is about when we are doing streets, when we are restriping streets today, are we putting our bike plan into motion? Because our bike plan really is kind of a subset in a way. It's related to our Complete Streets program. Because I understand that we are not doing that.
You're correct. We are not currently doing that with the striping of streets for bike.
Okay. So I want to step back for a second because I want my colleagues to understand this. We just went through 2 years of working on a bike plan. We engaged hundreds of people across our city. We created what I think is one of the most robust and ambitious bike plans in the country. And yet we are not putting it on the ground as we go out, colleagues, and we restripe streets. We're paying for it. We're restriping streets, but we aren't putting our bike lanes in. It's nuts. And so that's a policy decision. And I got to tell you, as far as policy goes, we got to change that policy.
We've got to bring that to you and show you what the difficulties are with that, because in many places I ride a bike all the time. If there were a lane there, the street is not in such condition that I can ride on it. So yes,
I don't think that's the case everywhere, Mary.
No. There's a circumstance.
Very few circumstances where that's the case. I've got to disagree with you on that.
Okay. Well, let us bring it back to you and bring you the issues and concerns with it and see what we can do with it.
Okay, in 30 days, I'd like to see a memo from you guys explaining why you're not doing that. I want you to tell me the streets over the last 6 months that you've already restriped. I want you to tell me the streets that you're planning to restripe.
I would rather bring back to a committee the whole process rather than send y'all a memo and just tell you what
to
do.
Okay, if you can get that and for us, I'd like to see that in the next 6 weeks to quality of life, okay? Let's see what else we've got here.
And this kind of just blew through. I didn't spend probably as much time as I should have.
Is
we have 50 CIP projects right now with some element of a complete
plan.
So maybe we should bring that too and let you know, see what we're already doing.
And I understand that, and explain CIP.
Oh, the capital improvement program where we take the bond money and we actually go out and build streets, we build sidewalks.
So, let's talk about the difference there. When we're rebuilding the streets, we're starting to slowly implement our bike plan. But when we're doing the cheaper thing, when we're just going out and restriping streets, we're not implementing our bike plan. That would be the easiest way to implement this bike plan. And it's not smart of us to not take advantage of that. And we need to change it. I want to look, and Linda, I'd love to talk with you about this because I know you know a lot more about this than I do, about the thoroughfare plan and how that interacts with implementation of complete streets. Because I know that we have some charter provisions about our thoroughfare plan and what has to happen when we want to implement either complete streets, when we want to change our thoroughfares. And that might be, I'm not sure if it is, but it might be an impediment to either putting down bike lanes or complete streets or narrowing streets. So I'd really like to learn and understand more about kind of how those relate so we understand if we need to make some changes to our charter, and which we have to bring to voters, we're prepared for that because we want to be able, I think, to react relatively quickly while engaging the public and making sure we have the public process taken care of. But we want to be able to do this more quickly, and I just want to make sure it's not an impediment to that, the thoroughfare plan and our charter restrictions aren't. Let me see. I think that's all. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. McGowan.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Could we go back to the map on slide 16? I wanted to comment on two projects and see how, you know, hard and fast we are with these. One of them is in District 6, Ms. Alonzo's district, so she would have to concur with this. But what I see here is it looks like we've stopped. Is that is the easternmost point on Royal Lane, is that Denton Drive or Harry Hines? Which is
Denton Drive.
So you're at the DART station there. If you drew that line and continued east about another half a mile, you would be hitting some major residential neighborhoods,
mm-hmm.
and thereby allowing those residents to easily access the DART station. So I think that's it. And I think it would just be hitting the boundary between District 6 and District 13, but there's lots of residential over there. There's single family as you go east, and there's apartments.
Sure, let's take a look at that.
So take a look at that.
Mm-hmm.
The other is going over to where the Park Lane and the Skillman Road kind of come together, and it seems sort of silly to me to have that gap in there. If we're going to go ahead and do both of these projects and it's possible to connect them, I would like to look at doing that if that's feasible.
Because mm-hmm. there's a lot of apartments right there. There's the golf course.
And what we're doing on we're taking the Park Lane over to the DART station at Park in Greenville.
Right.
So
yes.
It would make a lot of sense to connect it.
There's a lot of people walking in that neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
So those are two comments. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Margolin. Mr. Griggs.
Thank you, Mayor. Before I come back to this at the end of my comments, but complete streets are about two words, paint and bollards, to make them work. And if we step back and look around the world where this works, you can look at Enrique Penalosa's work in Bogota, Jamie Lerner in Curitiba, Brazil, Janet Sadiq Khan in New York City,
mm-hmm.
Jan Gehl in Copenhagen, and Peter Kenley in London. They all turned around the cities when they were broke with paint and bollards and doing projects in 90 days. So are you familiar with these,
yes,
with these other
am.
Cities, all mm-hmm. of them? And, I mean, just this morning the mayor gave me the December 2010 article in Esquire about...
that's a fabulous article.
It's a fabulous article. And how much are we spending on this study?
It's $795,000.
$795,000.
And it's not our money.
This is not our money. We got it. But
right.
It.
And but it is planning money.
Planning money. I mean, because, you know, all the work for planning this is already done. So when I got this article, I went down to my office. This is the 2007 copy of the New York City plan for implementing the paint and bollard written by Jeanette Sadiq Khan and Jan Gehl. They did that in 2009. This is the New York City Street Manual for Complete Streets.
Mm-hmm.
It walks through what material should be used. And what they do is they just classify their streets. They go, we got standard streets, historic streets, and we have pilot projects, and it lists what materials to use where as far as paint goes. And all of that. I mean, all this work has been done.
And that will be the outcome that we will have.
We will have something
yes,
comparable to the
yes.
end of it. Because we just waste so much time and money on this planning. And complete streets is about gradual change. It's not about surveying, asking people if they, what they think about transportation. Complete streets isn't about shredding things to death. It's about understanding transportation as an invitation. Everyone here, if your only way to get to work today was a roller coaster, you would have taken it, because it would have been your only way. But we have a city that makes the only way to get to work to be a car, and so we all take it. And what all these cities have discovered is if you extend the invitation to walk, make a better public realm, extend the invitation to bike, people will do it. Transportation is not data-driven. It's not driven by some people over at COG that project we're going to need this much lane miles in the future. Because the reality is with that, if you look at all the development along the tollway, all those lane miles, none of that would have developed but for the invitation in the road. Transportation is completely invitation-driven. It's latent demand. And we have to begin to understand that. In our public space, I see you disagree with that.
No, I don't.
Do you agree with that? Do you subscribe to that?
To what, sir?
Latent demand transportation model.
In what context are you talking about?
In the context for planning, do you agree that transportation is the single most important thing is giving an invitation to people, that it's latent demand?
Yes.
Then, if it's latent demand, then it's based on people's experiences. When people go out there, if you put paint and ballers out, what all these cities have found out, even cities, goes all the way down to South America on every continent. If you go out there, you put the paint, you put the ballers, you invite people out to the public space, they will gradually experience it, they'll have a good reaction, and they'll ask for it, and they'll ask that it stays. And I think back, I'll just read one thing. This was first all written, this whole idea of complete streets and gradual transformation was first written in a 1971 book, Life Between the Buildings. And the whole theory is gradual transformation allows for greater flexibility in the design process and facilitates attitude changes through public involvement and positive experiences. It's the whole idea that transportation is just about putting an invitation. And that's what our complete streets, that's the whole thing we're missing with this, is we're looking at the space, but the space needs to be designed for people. But we're not looking at the time scale of implementing these projects. It's both space and time to humanize something. And just as people, they want to see these paint and bollard projects out there. You just put some paint out, just like New York City. Are you familiar with how they, since 2007, the last 4 years, how they've completely made change Manhattan?
Absolutely.
And they did it on a shoestring.
Absolutely.
And they did it with paint and bollards.
Right.
Do the words paint and bollards appear in our presentation today?
But they did a design manual, and they did a plan. And
we need to start getting this on paint and bollards, because we could be doing this starting today. We are just planning this to death. We are putting in bond programs. We're going to bond program this to death. We're going to shred it to death. Well, the answer is the other solution. We go out there. We put some paint. We put some bollards on the roads. We give people an invitation to go out and use the space, and they will. They'll enjoy it. And then if they use that space more often, then we can put that space into the bond program and make it permanent. But what we're missing in the city of Dallas, to be a great city, you have to do two things. You've got to be able to do large projects that are big, but you also have to be able to do small projects quickly. Right now in the city of Dallas, we do not have the ability to do small projects quickly. Mm-hmm. If you look at all these cities, Bogota, Curitiba, Brazil, New York, Copenhagen, London, all of them can say, I'm going to launch a project in 90 days and get it done with paint and bollards and begin to transform a community. As the city of Dallas right now, we cannot say that. And that is a huge obstacle to being on the world stage. If we want to be a world-class city and we throw that around, you got to do two things. Small projects quickly, and you got to be able to do the large projects. We right now are not doing small projects quickly. And that needs to be the focus of our complete streets. And we know what the obstacles are to it. It's our own thoroughfare plan, which is under our control of the council. It's our own Chapter 43 of the Dallas Development Code, which probably hasn't been revisited in 70 years since 1941, that charges people for putting plants out in the public right of way, charges people for putting awnings out, charges people for setting merchandise out front, charges people for putting out cafe seating. That is in our power to change. And I've got an issue right now on Fort Worth Avenue right now. You go out there, we've completely repaved Fort Worth Avenue. We just repaved it. It's on the bike plan, as Angela was talking about, to get restriped. It's an example in the streets. And we're about to restripe it just for cars. and we just repaved it. It's complete. So, I mean, specifically, I'd like a response on Fort Worth Avenue and what's going on that when you get the memo to quality of life. Because that's a street that we are about to restripe for cars, and we're supposed to put in bike lanes. We have a developer that's willing to pay for bigger sidewalks out there, over there at the 400 block of Commerce at the mobile home, Dallas Mobile Home Park, part of that project. And we're just going to restripe everything for the automobiles. We are completely missing the ability to do small projects quickly. We have got to turn that around. And so on this, we should be doing some small projects now and learning about it. We don't need a design manual to start this. We don't need all these fancy brochures to start this. We just need a little money. We already know the areas. We need to go out there and experiment with it and give people an invitation to take back their public space and enjoy it, and they will. And that's what's missing utterly from our Complete Streets program. So would you like to respond?
No.
Please. Do you feel like it's missing from our Complete Streets program right now the ability? Well, I would like a response. If we ask staff a question, I think we're entitled to get a response. The response would be, right now, do you feel like this Complete Streets program is addressing doing small projects quickly?
Yes, I do. And let me tell you why. Because I think for all the work that the Better Block guys have done, I think they've done great work, but they're temporary. And I believe we need to get over the temporary pop-up. We need to transform our city. Those projects are not transformative. They're engaging, they're interesting, they're harnessing a new energy, a new way that people want to live in the city, and I think that's fantastic. But you're right, we've got obstacles. The thoroughfare plan will require a charter amendment. Our current licensing procedures need to be changed. Chapter 43 need to be changed. All of those things have to be changed if we're going to do something better than an ad hoc, one-by-one, one-off project. And that's what this it tries to do. It writes those manuals. It writes those. It changes. It looks at the charter question. It looks at the licensing question. It actually puts in place the foundation, the building blocks we need so that it's not a one-off 90-day temporary solution. So we can really start to transform our city like New York has done, like Times Square. That's what we want to see, not for 90 days, but where is this appropriate so that citizens can depend on it, and it'll be there. It'll be there. And it's not a striping project that's going to fade away in 18 months. It's a permanent installation. It's a facility.
I think we could do this now. We know what the obstacles are. If this council is serious about getting around Complete Streets, we can make the changes we need to the Dallas Development Code in the next month or two, and then we could get some projects out in the next couple months. There's no reason to put this on a horizon to beyond the 2012 bond program. We could get this started in 2011 and have them before the bond program. We know what the obstacles are. It's just whether or not we have the will as a council to do this, to do small changes quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Griggs. Mr. Atkins.
Thank you, Mayor. Teresa, how long have you been in Dallas?
I was raised in Dallas, sir.
Okay.
And even though I don't look 53, I am 53 years old.
Well, you know, we talk about Complete Streets, but I also believe in that you have to plan in order to make sure you're doing the right thing. Mm-hmm. If you look at Forest Avenue,
yeah,
and that's Martin Luther King, right?
Mm-hmm.
Will you agree they were Complete Street back in the 60s?
Yes, sir.
But now they're not Complete Street, right?
Yeah.
And so we have did things that if we'd have planned way back then and we knew those Complete Street were being complete Street now, we never changed Martin Luther King, right?
Mm-hmm.
So colleagues, what I'm saying is you go around through the whole city, we have had Complete Street, but we did not plan. So
as far as over there, come here.
Because, you know, I think that before you rush and do stuff, you need to plan. And sometimes we jump out there, we don't plan, we do have problems. When you change the street, You mean you change the design a whole lot of stuff, so you got a plan before you change the street. Is that a fair question?
That's fair. That's fair.
So when we change, when we try to change the street, what do we do? And then what is the problem when you make change without planning?
Well, what's happening right now in cooperation with the plans that Teresa is referring to is the street department and other staff are looking at how you would respond to customer calls for bike lane, for example. What constitute a pothole right now would be slightly different for bike traffic and
right.
Same for pedestrian. So those are the type of issues that the street department is working through with planning to be able to address a complete street program
okay.
In Dallas.
Yeah. And Teresa, I picked up the paper this morning and some companies is thinking about doing a Ferris wheel.
Yeah.
Behind the old courthouse.
Yeah.
So the idea with Dwayne and Shepard said have Main Street to be a complete street to make sure it's there, right?
Yeah.
So that is planning, right? So the first we get there, we can't change. If we don't plan, we might miss the opportunity to have a complete street on Main Street, which runs right by the Ferris wheel, which over 400,000 people come there every year to visit the
mm-hmm.
courthouse, right?
Yeah.
The record building. So these complete streets that we're talking about, even though on Camp Wilson, that I'm thinking about, you have from 35 to Bonneville, Lancaster, but also we'll also look at in front of Southwest Center Mall. I think you have people is walking there, and you got a great bike trail, right, Ryan? I love the bike trail there. And so those could be avenues that when you look at a large shopping center, maybe you can cut some side street in the shopping center, take away the parking, and said maybe you get the developer said, hey, let's put some little stores and little awnings and out there to make sure those are complete streets. So a complete street does not have to be a street. It could be a parking lot.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So I think we need to look into some of those ventures that we have large parking lots that could be complete street and try to make sure the developer know that. The reason that we are trying to put this on a 2012 bond is because of cost, right?
Yes, sir.
And have we determined what the cost might be?
Well, we know, depending on the different elements, some of these costs can be very minor, like Mr. Griggs has pointed out, if we're just talking about paint and buttons. But other streets are going to need a shoulder improved. They'll need more facilities built. So we need to understand what those costs are.
But also, we want to make sure we got safety, right?
Oh, yes.
Very.
Absolutely.
We don't want to mm-hmm. just paint a line and someone get hurt.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Atkins. Ms. Coop. Sorry.
Thank you. Well, we have a lot of energy in the room, and I think that's a good thing. And I think complete streets in one part of town is different than complete streets in another part of town. And I'll speak for some parts of North Dallas. The one that we picked out is kind of a reconstruction of that segment of Alpha eventually because of the changes we'll have in the Valley View Mall Galleria area. But I do think that there are some things maybe that we can change to our thoroughfare plan, and we'll have to take a look at that. I'm willing to bring that to the Transportation Committee because I don't know that I fully understand what the issues are with the charter, but I do understand what the issues are overall in the Metroplex area with getting funding once you start changing your thoroughfare plan. So I do understand that funding mechanism that's there, but that's not to say that's not a possibility to change the thoroughfare plan how it relates to the charter. So let's take a look at that, and we'll put that on our list and kind of massage that and see if there's some issues there. To Ms. Hunt's comment about since we were both here when we did the awning thing, that didn't turn out to be a good decision. We just need to go back and correct it. And so you're going to bring that to your committee?
Yeah.
We just need to go back and look at it one more time and, either get rid of it or make some changes to it so it's better, or have zones where you can have that. Maybe it's not appropriate in every place. I don't know. I think that can pretty readily be done. As to the phases of the streetcar, now into the second phase of the streetcar, because we're, in my mind, once the funding elements are put together for the first phase, I go on to the second phase for the funding elements. Second phase being to Bishop Arts and then to the Pearl Street Station that's connecting the historic streetcar to the modern streetcar. I do think that, I've talked to downtown folks about a bus perhaps going up and down Main Street or even circulating. It might be an idea at this time to try something like the low floor bus that is a bus rapid transit. It looks more like a streetcar. It is rubber tired. Not the rubber tired trolley that they had necessarily, but a bus rapid transit concept, because where you can load, like in Denver, you can load everybody at one time because there's three or four doors that open. You can unload everybody at one time. So you get the feeling of being on a rapid transit or a streetcar, but it really is a bus, and you can't really tell too much difference through the way that it's actually constructed. It might, you know, look, these bus companies will come out and they'll do that demonstration for you downtown. They'll bring one of those out, you know, and just so they can show off their technology. You know, that would be a really cool thing to get a quick win, you know, in the downtown area, to try to get one of those companies to come and bring that down. And then the last thing I want to talk to, because there have been some great ideas here today, and then yesterday I had an opportunity to speak to the minority contractors. It's called COMPTO. They're transportation contractors for transportation. You know, Complete Streets, with the size of the projects that we're talking about, you know, being smaller, those are great opportunities for young, emerging businesses, especially minority-owned businesses. Would really be a great opportunity to get a win-win on some of this. And I agree with Mr. Griggs. I do think we can go quicker than what we've been doing, but it would be a great idea to get a win-win on that with some, with the procurement partner, if they could come up with that kind of methodology.
All about bidding,
that's right. But follow what I'm saying, though. These are, I agree with you, it's all about bidding. But they were real interested in this Complete Streets program. They were. They realized it's some opportunity, some paint, some bollard, some concrete making, you know, some bollard making, some paving and that kind of thing. They understood that concept, and those are the kinds of businesses that were there. If I'm correct, Ms. Alonzo, I'm sure you knew some of those businesses that were there. I just think it is all about bidding, but it's an opportunity to start lining that up with our procurement department as an outreach program.
That's the kind of things that when the procurement department has these kind of meetings, one of the things we're asking is, here's the projects we've got coming up. What would work for you, and how would the packaging work for you? So that conversation goes on. So we'll just put that one on the list to add to.
Yeah, do that. Because I think there's a real education opportunity for contracting and minority contractors, and I just think, you know, that could be a real positive. We could have contracts with 100% minority. Mm-hmm. I mean, because of the size of the packages there. Anyway, some good ideas.
Thank you, Mr. Coop. Mr. Coop, you said Scott. Ms. Coop. Ms. Medrano.
Thank you, Mayor. I think that there has been some very interesting comments here. I think Ms. Hassel had asked on the technical committee, how many are in the technical committee, and how often? I know that they've met. Who are they? Are they people? I was looking at the appendix, and you know, a couple of the more important was pedestrian safety and lighting and you know, follow-up mm-hmm. maintenance. Mm-hmm. Is Encore in this technical committee? Because I think it's so important. I know Ms. Hunt and myself worked on Light Up Oak Lawn recently, and all those lights have been installed. So I just think that perhaps, you know, I don't know if that would be the appropriate committee, because if we've got maybe some examples, as Mr. Griggs says, that we could do, not only do we want some sample possibilities, but not only would it work in day, but I would think that it would work at night as well. So I don't know whether there could be some temporary lighting to show some of these demonstrations both at day and at night, because I mean, you want people to come during the day, but you also want them to feel safe at night. So I think, I don't know, on the technical committee, who's on the technical committee?
I'm going to have to punt to Pierre. I do believe Encore's on there, but we will get a memo out with everybody that's on that committee.
Yes, we have actually invited a representation from the various utility companies on our...
Oh, various utility companies? Yes. I just thought lighting, because that was on the appendix.
And there is actually a standing committee of utility companies that meets regularly with the Public Works Department, and we're trying to stay coordinated with that.
Oh, you're trying to coordinate with that as well. Okay, I think what would be, Ms. Coop and Mr. Atkins and I were just sidebarring here. I think it would be a good idea that, and I think it may be follow up what Mr. Griggs was saying, and you know how they have the flash mobs? Maybe a flash, a complete street project and go somewhere. I mean, kind of already pre-planned, but at a certain time, different people come and, you know, either bring a plant or a street light or some type of landscaping and do something really quick. I think it would be really cute. Thanks.
Thank you, Ms. Medrano. Ms. Davis.
Thank you for the second round. You know, I continue to hear, and you know, I support complete streets. But when you go to New York City, I was in Washington at the Black Caucus, and, you know, everybody, you know, Dallas is large, it's spread out. And there it is, it's so everybody's like on top of each other. And so they have to do a lot with a small area, which makes it a little different. Now, one of the things I do like about complete street, for example, in South Dallas, we just added some stripes going down the crossing, the four-lane crossing or the four-sidewalk crossing, and it made that area look so different. So I do agree a little with Scott that adding paint on some of the things in our streets can make a big difference. Or making a street a bike lane, just on the street with some striping and calling it a bike lane, adding the four-way stop signs and adding stripes to those, perhaps adding awnings, and I like banners. I'm talking about small things, perhaps the banners or something. But one of the things I think, Jill, that we need to look at, and I agree with Mr. Cadane, Highland Road in Ferguson, that area has no sidewalks. Mm-hmm. So what do we do with streets like that to get it on our bond package? Mm-hmm. Do we need to get that information to you?
We need to check the needs inventory, and Jill, give it to Jill. We'll make sure it gets on there. That's a dangerous street.
Okay,
thank you.
Ms. Davis, Mr. Allen, went away. Ms. Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. O'Donnell, thank you for your presentation.
Thank you, ma'am.
I would like to remind all of my colleagues, but especially in response to Ms. Hunt and Mr. Griggs' comments, the money that Ms. O'Donnell is talking about is planning money. That money, as you know, comes from the federal government through the COG. And because we have been so very diligent at the federal level, we get good response on funding, but the usage of the funding cannot be appropriated other than what the regulations call for. That means that if we're going to do other things, such as what y'all have labeled quick wins, we will have to find some other money. We cannot do it with this money that Ms. O'Donnell is talking about. Ms. Sim and Company is sending me to Washington again fairly soon. And when they send me to Washington, they always expect me to come back with bags of cash. And we may be able to get implementation money, but let me emphasize that this is planning money. I believe, Ms. O'Donnell, that's why you have focused this presentation on planning, because that's what the money is designated for and cannot be reallocated according to the City Council. Am I correct?
Yes, ma'am. And also in increases our opportunity to get implementation funds if we have good solid plans and standards in place.
And in Washington, colleagues, that is a factor that is looked at. Again, let me reiterate, we do very well, but we do very well because we plan well, we're very organized. Our staff is very, very good about following the rules and making the reports. And I would not want us to adversely impact our good record in any manner. Secondly, I agree with Councilmember Carraway and Councilmember Cadane about the possibility of closing Main Street downtown to vehicular traffic. This is not the first time I've said this. I've said this before. Mr. Cadane, there are a number of streets in the country that have their main street downtown closed to vehicular traffic. I think it's a wonderful idea. And if we can look at it and implement it, I would be very, very much in favor of that. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Hill. Ms. Grayson.
Thank you, Mayor. First of all, I want to wish Ms. Hill lots of success and good luck in bringing back big bags of cash from Washington, D.C. I wanted to talk a little bit about rubber tire trolleys. When I was on council before, I had Ms. Cook's office, and I used to sit out and look at Young Street and look at DART, who had these cute little rubber tire trolleys. They were so cute to look at. It wasn't the rabbit ear buses. No, these were little small buses that looked exactly like trolleys. They were so attractive. They were so cute, and there was never one single person on them. And so DART didn't use them for very long. They did away with them. I think Ms. Cooper was on the board at the time. I think they sold them to, where did they go?
Hawaii.
Yeah, they sold them to somebody else. And I think part of the problem was that people didn't want to get on that trolley because they never knew where it was going to go. You know, when you have a regular trolley, you have tracks in the street, people kind of know kind of more or less where that is going to go. They never knew where that rubber tire trolley was going to go, so they never wanted to get on it. And I would just say that, you know, let's listen to what Ms. Koop said and her suggestion about the buses with the low floors, and let's not kind of repeat history. Let's not spend any money repeating history. And when we know it doesn't work, let's talk to DART about why that didn't work and what their suggestions might be. I was on an Inside the Loop committee when I was here before, chaired by Robert Deckard, and we talked about that. And one of the suggestions somebody on that committee came up with, which was so simple, and in Mr. Griggs' comments reminded me of it, they said one way you can create some certainty about where that trolley's going to go is simply paint a yellow line on the street. It's a really inexpensive, quick way of ensuring some certainty for where people who are going to get on that and kind of know where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to put up elaborate signage. You don't have to take forever to do it. It's kind of a nice way of saying, as Mr. Griggs was trying to say, is you don't have to plan something to death. All you have to do is get out there and do it. So think about putting some yellow paint down on the street, or red or green or whatever you want to paint it. I was just listening to this kind of tension between let's get something done right away and let's plan it and plan it and plan it. There's certainly got to be a happy medium, I think, between those people who say, you know, we can be successful by just getting something done and having our citizens see this and then saying, you know, I really like that. Let's do more of it. And then just planning it, planning it, planning it. So surely there's got to be, you know, some sort of happy medium in there. And then I also wanted to ask, in the bond program, because there's a potential project in each district, but you're not necessarily going to fund all of those in this bond program. Because I've got to tell you, as neat as these things are, and I have one project in my district that I work with Mr. Chaco on, you know what the people in my district really and truly want in the bond program? They want their alleys fixed. I mean, I hear that time and time and time again. So I just want to say I hope we have the opportunity to make some choices here for our own districts, and whether people would want to spend the money more on a complete street, which they might. I don't know. But also that, you know, to listen as we're supposed to be doing out there, hearing what our constituents say, and they're telling me they want alley repairs, alley reconstructions, alleys, alleys, and more alleys. So just wanted to mention that. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grayson. Ms. Hunt.
making, Mr. Mayor. Sandy, you read my mind in talking about the wheeled trolleys and paint on the street. That, you know, that's used very successfully in other cities to kind of mimic this idea of the track that you can see with track streetcars. And so I think it gives you a little bit more certainty. I would say, though, that, you know, downtown has changed so much, I think, since we last looked at a wheeled streetcar, because I've been against this as well for a while, because I was worried that if we had a wheeled streetcar, it would kind of eliminate the need or urgency to do a real streetcar. But I think we can do both. I don't think they're mutually exclusive, and I think we can get some quick wins. But in the last 10 years, we've seen the folks who live in downtown go from fewer than 500 people to over 6,000 people. And so, and it's growing every day, and we're having new residences built every day in and around downtown, the Cedars, Deep Ellum, across in Oak Cliff. And so I think we're seeing a lot of growth there. So it might be a time to revisit that and see if we can support it. If we can, I think it's definitely worth doing. I want to address also this balance between planning and doing. Because I certainly don't want to imply that we need to throw this out. We don't need to do any planning. We got it all worked out. And I don't think Scott intends for that either, not to speak for him. But I think my hope is that, as Sandy said, that we can see some things on the ground sooner than later. I love these projects, and I think you guys did a terrific job pinpointing some good locations for some long-term complete streets. I do like this paint and bollards idea, though, and that's something that we're going to look at in quality of life, and I look forward to talking with you more about it, because I think we can make some stuff happen. I think we can learn from doing these kind of pilots, some quick wins, so that we can make these even better, so that we'll understand better how to respond to communities and know better what to put on the ground in a permanent fashion, long term. But as far as money goes, there's no question that the funds that we have are for planning, and no one is suggesting that we can somehow transfer those funds and go out and change or put up bollards with those funds. But the amount of money that it takes to paint and to put in bollards is so minimal. It's so minuscule. And particularly on the streets that we're restriping, there's a little added cost there. So it really makes sense for us to be smart about doing some quick wins at little cost. We can make this happen, and I think we can make some real improvements to our neighborhoods by doing that. On that topic, I think Scott brought up Fort Worth Avenue. When is that scheduled to be restriped? Yeah, when are we scheduled to restripe Fort Worth?
I don't have the schedule with me, but I can get that and provide it for you.
Okay, what I'd propose that we do, because I think you've heard some interest from several of the folks on the council, is let's hold off on restriping this permanently until we get our arms around how we want to address doing our bike plan implementation, because that is a major thoroughfare for our bike plan, and it just doesn't make any sense for us to go ahead and restripe this. If we make a policy decision.
Okay, we can certainly bring those options to you. I just want to be sure if there are any safety issues involved. We've got them on the table.
We're doing it now. We don't have it restripped right now, and people aren't not.
I know, but
so
I'm worried about it. I'll be glad to do it.
Okay.
I just need to have all the pieces there and not make
the
decision too quickly.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Ms. Grayson.
Yeah, I just forgot to mention in my comments about closing Main Street. Chicago closed State Street a number of years ago to all vehicular traffic, and they did that experiment for, I don't know, maybe 10 years or something, and then they undid it because it wasn't at all successful. So before we do it, let's just, like, talk to people who have already done it and see why they felt like it was either a good idea or not a good idea, why it worked or didn't work. I think Ms. Kuth wants it. And that was just the point I wanted to make, is let's not reinvent the wheel. Let's talk to people who have tried it and see whether they feel it works, and if it didn't, why it didn't.
Thank you. Ms. Coop?
Well, and that's a good point, Ms. Grayson, because in lots of cities it has not worked and they've had to go back. So it has to do with the rest of your street patterns. It has to do with what is on the street that's there or what you're trying to accomplish. We'll take Boulder, for example. They were specifically trying to, and even Fort Collins in Colorado, they're specifically trying to create the retail space and restaurant space for those two cities. So in some cities it works really, really well. In some cities it has not worked well at all. And I just emailed Gary Thomas and asked him, could they get a bus rapid transit car here, you know, as a demonstration? Because it would be really cool to try that experiment for a week and see how it worked.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you know, and if it didn't work, it didn't work. I mean, you'd know. But you have the transportation element of it. You'd have the closing element of it. You know, you could do some fairs and stuff like that along that street to see how people like it. Some people are going to not like it. Speaking as a family who owned a business downtown for 75 years, okay, there are, you know, you have to walk carefully into that simply because if it starts to affect the commerce on that street, and as a matter of fact, our business is on Commerce Street, if it starts to affect the commerce on that street, you'll have some very unhappy retail owners there. So it does have to be careful.
Well, in Chicago, it was the merchants who asked that the street be opened up again because it wasn't working. So, I mean, I just thought, you know, instead of just let's move forward with the idea that we're going to check with people who have done that already and see what their experience was. And Ms. Coop is right. There could be different reasons in different cities why you would want to have that and why it would work in one place and why it wouldn't work in another place.
Ms. Alonzo?
I'm sorry, I got an answer in regards to what was on.
Okay,
so
gotcha. Let's just a couple of last comments. Mr. Griggs, keep it quick.
Yes, if we look at these other cities, particularly Bogota, their implementation of complete streets by the mayor there, and if we look at Mayor Jimmy Lerner's implementation in Curitiba, Brazil, what they did was they looked at how much money they have and then the best use for that money. To implement complete streets, they didn't put up some big vision, some big dream, and then try to go get an unrealistic amount of money so that it would take years to do. And so part of the theory of complete streets is you say, how much money do we have now, and what can we do with it? Inevitably, both these cities were absolutely broke, Bogota and Curitiba, when they implemented complete streets. They had a lot less money than we did. So they found the little bit of money they had, and they said, how can we put this into paint and bollards to make this work? And that's what New York City had initially, where not everyone was on board with complete streets there. They said, with a small amount of money, just what we have, how can we put that money to work rather than going the other way, where we plan some grandiose vision that's going to take two or three bond packages to realize. You can do it the other way. Thank you.
Great. Mr. Cadane.
Thank you. Just on the Main Street project, hopefully, Teresa, that would be a part of the study that y'all are doing on complete streets, and that y'all would come back to us with something on it saying, hey, this won't work, or why it won't work. But hopefully we'll make that study prior to doing anything there.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cadane. Just a couple of closing comments. First of all, I'm glad Mr. Gillette's here, because I think this is really important for the city of Dallas. I hear a lot of passion and unanimity that this should be a major strategic initiative for the city of Dallas. And we need to kind of get that word out that something big in a small way, or something small in a big way, is going to be happening in the city of Dallas. And that we are all locking arms on this, because we're going to have to make some tough decisions later this week when we do strategic planning and kind of prioritize these things. But I'm hearing a passion around this council in that regards, and I think that's big news. Maybe boring to a lot of people, but I'll tell you, it will impact people's lives on a local basis, and I think that's major import to the city of Dallas. I do believe that communication is important in this, and we need to paint a better picture. I think some of the research there starts to do that. I liked how you politically put on page 25, significant opportunity exists in Dallas to gain widespread public support. In other words, people aren't supporting this because they don't know it, is the other way to put it, okay? This is not a big hot button for people, so we need to kind of lead and explain what is going to be happening and help them understand that this is a planning process for the next period of time that will change Dallas. The other thing is, I think I'd love to see a pie chart of the amount of people, the percentage that use auto, bikes, walking, or other in a week. And I bet you would find that it's a much, we're not as, yes, the amount of usage is auto-centric, but I think we all use the streets in different ways, and we probably don't dramatize that appropriately. Most of us walk our streets at night, or the dog, they'll grab a bike. There's a lot of other usage, so kind of looking like we're all auto and just a small piece. And there's some numbers in there that start to get at that, but it's not cut exactly that way. So that's just if somebody is a quant jock someplace and kind of think about that, that'd be good. The one thing that hasn't been talked about, I agree with a lot has been said, but I think we need to talk about this in regards to the economic development, Mr. Atkins. Great ideas go across a lot of things. I'm pleased to finally see the Asian Trade District up there, because this is a major economic industry for the city of Dallas, and how we think about connecting that to our neighborhoods is extremely important. Thinking about that, the Main Street issue obviously is one that we just talked about with economic development. I think people that made major investment like Hedetins and Associates need to be talked to in that regards, and we just all kind of need to discuss things like that, as Ms. Koop said. Look, the big issue is really the issue of speed versus planning, and I agree with Ms. Hunt, this is not an either-or situation. To be great, you have to do something well once, and then you have to be able to scale it. Mr. Kadane's point, I think, is very important, that this is not a one-trick pony, okay, that you're just duplicating. So you don't have to plan for scale, you have to plan for innovation, which is a little bit different thing. So I am definitely on the side of speed, because I think we're going to be innovating and experimenting, and we're never going to be able to plan all the perfection that we need. I'm a big planner. I love planning, and I think what you're doing here is, I endorse completely. I just would put it, and how do we get stuff in the ground in the next 90 days? You know, look at it in a kind of a 90-day increment and say, because we can be planning and doing at the same time. And it's tricky, there's no question, but I think the key is about empowering neighborhoods. Because what I see up there is that neighborhoods will start to be empowered, and some of them will just hate painting bollards, okay? And say that's the worst idea in the world, and some people will say that's the greatest idea, we can do it quickly. And let's listen to our neighborhoods and get it done, but let's not, you know, someone once told me, if I wait for all the traffic lights turn green getting to the airport, I'm going to miss my plane. So I think we need to kind of get some stuff going as we plan in this, and we will have a much better city in the next coming years because of this effort. So I just hope we're all locked arms on this. Let's quality of life, economic development, let's keep this on everybody's priority list. Come back every quarter or so, how are we doing on this, and keep pushing it down the road. But great.
May I ask you a question?
Yes, Ms. Davis.
Since you're just talking about this, can we look at neighborhoods that already have something going? And so for those neighborhoods, and each one of us have something going on in our neighborhood, and take one major street that we want to see to start that kind of push, and we give that to who?
I think Teresa, and I got a sense that that's what's going on here, but let's codify that better, and let's put an action plan, and everybody, each of the council people would be have ownership of that. Great, thank you very much, Teresa. What I'd like to do is try to get this done before lunch.
Mayor?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah,
I know we got your thing.
We have the thing at noon, the Arts and Humanities Month. So I hope.
That's what I was just going to say. We've got a press conference at noon, or a proclamation, and I'd like to get that and special speakers through. So, Mary?
Okay. Jill is going to take really quickly. This is just a prep for Thursday and Friday. Jill is just going to take you really quickly through the briefing that's in your notebook, kind of reminding about where we are in strategic plans, and then we're going to kind of give you a preview of the day. So we'll be short.
Great. For the little handout that was in your packet, overview of strategic planning, this is our management tool to always look ahead of what it is that we ought to be looking at, just like the conversation that we just had. That was a kind of a strategic planning kind of conversation. And so it's a way of looking at how to improve and kind of set our direction. Now let me go through the terms of strategic planning just so that we're all on the same wavelength here. The mission of the city, this is what we're about. This is what we're trying to accomplish. It's not tied to a specific time frame. It's general in terms of time. So our mission for the city of Dallas is to enhance the vitality and the quality of life for all in the Dallas community. So again, it's global, but it's talking about what it is that we all are going to do together. The vision is, what do we want our city to be like? So it's long-term, it stands the test of time. Our vision is the city that works, diverse, vibrant, and progressive. And values, this is the kind of behaviors that we want our city employees to have. The list is here. We use them in our performance reviews of employees. We also use them in our recognition program. And so that's a piece of this. Then you have the goals for the city. And the council several years ago set up our key focus areas. So we have the six of them. And each key focus area has a goal. Again, it is not tied to a specific time. It is general in nature. So, for example, in public health, their goal is to enhance public safety to ensure that people feel safe and secure where they live, work, and play. So, again, very global. Then we begin to hone in and get more specific and try to get to what are we actually going to accomplish. That's what an objective is. In the case of public safety, one of our objectives there is to improve our position as the safest large city in the nation. So that's an objective. So we've moved down from goal to objective. And then you get to the indicator. Well, how are we going to measure that? How are we going to know that we've achieved our objective? Well, that's because we're looking at the crime rate. And so we're going to improve from being the seventh safest to the sixth safest. So it's this hierarchy down to where we actually come up with what are we going to be doing and working on this next year. Now this pyramid kind of, I hope, tries to put all these things in relationship to each other. Mission, vision, and values at the very apex, these are the big picture kinds of things. Our key focus areas, that's where you're directing staff, what it is that we are going to be working on and our objectives. So what are we going to be doing in a more general way? Then you have the two strategic plans. Because we are a city, unlike a company, we've got a geographic plan that we've got to work on. That's Forward Dallas. So how are we going to build ourselves out? What are we going to look like in a physical sense? And then the strategic plan covers our organization. What are we going to do as an organization? The strategic plan then focuses downward to the action plan. That's our tactical plan. What are we going to do each year? The Forward Dallas plan, how are we going to do that? Well, that's the bond program. And so, you know, how do we accomplish that?
bond program. And then we also have other tactical plans like our quality system and our environmental management system. Then we have the funding, the capital budget, and the operating budget. And then below all of that, you have the individual actions of all of the employees and yourselves dealing with performance plans, rewards, recognition, training, and how we all communicate. So that's how it all fits together. So where we are going for Thursday and Friday, Thursday is going to be a day in which we have a couple of speakers, but Friday we're going to get into the heart of this strategic planning. We've got two documents that we're going to pass out to you right now.
No, hold on. Let me. The first thing you're getting is the schedule for the day, where you go, and so on and so forth. The first day is in the afternoon, about 2 o'clock. There are instructions on where you go, where you park, how you get there. There are two speakers. They're broad general speakers that look at the future. One of them is talking about what your future citizens will look like, and the other ones are talking about attitudes and perceptions of the people across the country and in Dallas. These are just the speakers that you can interact with, ask questions, and kind of get a frame and a approach to looking and thinking about the next day.
I would suggest that you don't minimize missing those, because I think they're both going to be really excellent.
They're really good speakers, we've heard. So, and then the evening will be a social time, the dinner and so on and so forth. The next day is when we start the work on the strategic plan, and we've got two pieces of pre-review for you to do. You don't need to bring them with you. This is just kind of get you warmed up, because we'll bring original copies with us when you come, so you can kind of start again. The first of the packet is to remind you of where we are and how we've been doing with this. This is a chart of strategic plan and what we've accomplished up to this point. I just bring this so that you can see kind of how it's worked over the last several years. Also, when we give ourselves these goals and have indicators, we always want them to be stretch goals. So you won't be seeing that we've got a check mark or we've done better on each and every one of them. A strategic plan is over a period of time, and so it has to be accomplished over a period of time, so you'll see. And this shows you the objective, the indicator, how we did on the objective, and kind of what we've done for those objectives. Again, just kind of background for prepping as you go forward. The next sheet is a really critical sheet, and this is your work papers for
Friday.
For Friday. Friday morning, the chairs of the committees will take a few minutes to stand up, about 15 minutes, and talk about what goals, and there really are objectives that you've made. What are your objectives for the coming year? A little short, here they are, kind of background on them. If anybody has any questions or concerns, maybe you as a chair want to do something, the rest of the council doesn't want to do it. The staff needs your consensus and instruction on how to move forward, so they'll do that. At 9:30, we'll do those reports, have lunch. After lunch, we'll break out into committees. You'll see your committee. You see at 1 o'clock, the Public Safety and Economic Development Committee will be working. There are no overlaps on those committees, but there are four or five people that aren't on either one of them, so we're asking that you join one of those groups to work with that committee to work on how we move forward with the strategic plan. The work that the committee will be doing, take this sheet that says Economic Development Committee. This is just an example because we're not quite through yet. As you'll see at the top, we have what the mayor asked you as chair people to do. You will see the key focus area that exists in our strategic plan. Those are the ones that the council has established and okay. They don't line up completely with your committee. So sometimes there will be key focus areas of economic vitality in two committees, but that's just to remind you of that. Okay, so here's the existing strategic plan objectives as we have them right now in the strategic plan. Column 4 is the objectives that the various chairs and committees have sent forward. Column 5 is blank. The work you need to do is to combine those two existing objectives and the proposed objectives. Now, in some cases, they're already matched, because some of you went back and reviewed them and said we need to keep marching along this road. Others of you have added new ones, and some of them in the existing one needs to come off because they are done. So that one of the objectives is build a hotel. The hotel's built, so it needs to be taken off. I would ask you to think about our resources, both people and money as we put these lists together and be sure we've got enough of both of those to get these things done and we don't have too much assignment. Because you're really writing our working instructions for the next 3 or 4 years. If we have time, you will see in the sixth column is how we're going to accomplish these things. There's a work plan. Some of you did that when you did your objective. You said, okay, here was my objective, and then here's how I want to accomplish it, the things I want to do to work toward it. That's really your plan, and you'll see those over here. So we'll be asking you to look a little bit at the plan, too, to give us a little feedback on the plan. I hope that we'll all be conscious of you've got a budget already set, finding the resources to do new things, also the volume of work we've got to do, and also remember the strategic plan is a 2 to 3 year outlook, and so they won't all be done the first year. So, to rehash, this is your schedule and your plan. This one is just to kind of read and remember where we are. In some places, we set really high goals for our organization, and we're still working on achieving them. In other places, we've already achieved them, and they're done. This is just to kind of give you some background where we need to focus. You can bring it with you Friday if you want to or not. And these are your worksheets. And again, it's just to give you an example. We will have these worksheets for you after. But if you want to look at them and you have any questions, before the end of the day, if yours is not in here, Mark, are they all in here?
No. Okay. Just second.
Okay. If they're not all in here, we'll get you the worksheet for the end of the day so you can. This is your worksheet. Yeah. Yeah. We'll bring it to you at the end of the day. Is there any questions?
I have one question.
Yeah. Sure. And there's some cases in your individual committee group, you're going to have a discussion about what committee has jurisdiction. Because some of these overlap, and if you've got two committees working on one project, you double in the work for the presentations and all those kind of things, and then sometimes they arrive at the council with conflicting. So you might have a discussion in some of those cases about, okay, are we doing trees in the median over here, or are we doing trees in the median over there? So I would expect you to have that discussion, too.
Yeah, the other thing I would say, I this is probably a very, very important thing, is Friday is the day that if there are any issues that anybody wants to get on the table to have us work, even though you're not part of that committee, now's the time to get them on the table. Because if we come back 4 or 5 months later and somebody wants to do something in a major way, the train's already left the station. So now, you know, really think hard in preparing that and listen to everybody that is capturing the things that are most important to do. Okay? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. It should be a good couple of days. And I look forward to it. Ms. Rios, our last agenda item is speakers.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We are going to begin your afternoon speakers with Sandra Crenshaw, followed by Frank Ward of Zumba Lunch and Robert Ceccarelli.
Guys, let's keep it quiet so we respect our speakers.
I will first recite the speaker guidelines. Citizens and other visitors attending the meeting of the City Council shall observe the same rules of propriety, decorum, and good conduct applicable to members of the City Council. Any persons making personal, impertinent, profane, or slanderous remarks or who become boisterous while addressing the City Council or while attending the City Council meeting shall be removed from the room if the Sergeant-at-Arms is so directed by the presiding officer, and the person shall be barred from further audience before the City Council during that session of the City Council. Individuals are allowed 3 minutes to speak. You'll notice the timer on both walls. Please address your comments to Mayor Rawlings. Again, your first speaker is Sandra Crenshaw. Please state your name and address for the record.
My name is Sandra Crenshaw. Address not provided. Mayor, I wish that this city had advised the citizens about the Voting Rights Act in a big way, as you just described about the proposals here today, because a disinformed community is a divided community. Congress in 2006 explicitly stated that the purpose of the Section 5 Voting Rights Act is to protect
the ability of the racial and language minorities to elect their preferred candidates of choice. In America, you must be of voting age, and you must also be either a born or a naturalized citizen to elect. Congress also intended, and the courts have been upheld, in the Voting Rights Act does not mandate proportional representation. Nothing in the Voting Rights Act establishes a right to have members of the protected class elected or redistricted equal to their proportional count in the population. The Justice Department, this council, nor myself can determine if this proposed map will pre-clear based merely on voting age population statistics alone, because we have to look at the voting behavioral patterns of your proposed plan. I hear a lot of talk about the fact that we do have a minority district in District 10, and I want it to be recognized that when the Justice Department looks at the plan, they look at the whole plan. They don't just look at the voting age population. And so in District 10, in 2010, we had a minority district in City Council District 10. Those minorities are protected as well. So they cannot replace the voting rights of the minorities in 4, 5, 7, and 8. It is the total plan, and it is the net effect of retrogression that will be looked at. So I leave you with that, and for those that want to, this is reprinted in 206 USCCAN 618, 678-79. And good luck. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Crenshaw.
Your next speaker is Frank Ward, not present. Ozumba Lux, not present. Robert Ceccarelli, not present. Marvin Crenshaw. Mr. Crenshaw will be followed by Otis Fagan, Richard Sheridan, William Hobson, William Whitten.
Marvin Crenshaw, 5134 Malcolm X Boulevard, representing the J.B. Jackson Jr. Institute and the South Dallas think tank. I just want to share some history with you about certain issues. In 1979-80, we started the Martin Luther King Jr. street name change. The purpose of it was to go from South Dallas into Oak Cliff to unite Southern Dallas, run an issue, all of Southern Dallas. In 1984, during the county commissioner's race in District 3, which was won by John Wyatt Price, the candidate I supported, Mr. Elsa J. Higgins, the goal was to organize and unite all of us of Southern Dallas, all of Southern Dallas. In 1991, the first election under 14-1, as a candidate in District 4, our goal then was to organize and unite all of Southern Dallas and ask the question about sharing the power. Right now, the equation is still the same, is that we're still talking about uniting Southern Dallas and sharing the economic and political power in the city of Dallas. Now, we have four districts. African Americans, where we can elect our preferred choice, now and then. And we're not asking for any more than the four that we feel that we deserve. We'll support anybody else if they think they deserve 10 districts. We'll support that. But even though my good friend Mr. Griggs last night was holding us to have 5 districts, you know, the one in District 10, we're not going over there. But let me make this short. I don't have a minute. But for years after the first election, we fought for years to have, you know, Larry Duncan represented district for a long time. We fought to have a person that we feel an African American to be elected in District 4. In District 1, in a 74% district, I think that it's time for those progressive whites in District 1 to step aside and allow the Latino or the Hispanic population to elect a person of their choice. It's only right. That district has always been a minority district, or a majority minority district over there, and has always been represented by an Anglo. And it's time to step aside and let the Hispanic community have their seat at the table in that district. So, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Grinchoff.
Your next speaker is Otis Fagan, not present. Richard Sheridan will be followed by William Hopkins, Gwen Wooten, and Jada Wooten.
Yes, good morning. My name is Richard Sheridan. I live at 3022 Forest Lane, Dallas, Texas, and I appreciate being here. I'm presenting an excerpt of the speech. You'll have a full copy of it this afternoon. This has to do with a matter of the city charter. It has to do with a matter of calling for a recall election. Take a second look at our mayoral situation. Our nation is being torn apart by partisanship, by special interests, by the significant lack of representation of the people by their elected representatives. As it is in Washington, D.C., as above, so below, as it is here in Dallas, Texas. Mayor, you are our leader, elected at large by the citizens of Dallas with the hope of many that you would lead our city on a different course set by former mayors Leppert and Miller. Mayor Leppert and Miller's administration were embroiled in controversies such as the Convention Center Hotel, the Trinity Project, the biggest corruption case in Dallas history, and the homeless. For about 4 years prior to your election, Mayor, you were Dallas homeless czar. During this time, although Dallas homeless population continues to rise as it has throughout the nation, New York went from 40,000 to 100,000 the last couple of years, I allege that you and Mayor Leppert put out propaganda that the Dallas homeless population was on the decline and that the Bridge and the MDHA were doing a great job in serving Dallas homeless. I and a growing constituency consider your first 5 months in office to be a failure and indicative that you are on the same course as former mayors Leppert and Miller in being a special interest mayor. Two of the prime examples of your special interest agenda are the McComas landfill vote and the redistricting map that the city council just voted on. And I think you just experienced an outcry from the community about the lack of the Hispanic representation. Concerning the recent redistricting map, during the last 3 weeks, you repeatedly abridged citizens' right of free speech to give their input on the redistricting process. The new map keeps 3 points. The new map keeps 28% minority white community in control of Dallas. It ignored the excellent opportunity to create a black opportunity district in District 10, which today is a weak white district. Three, the new redistricting map caused tension, division, and ill feelings between the Hispanic and black communities. Both the Dallas Morning News and Bill Benson rejected the new map as not responsive to the need of a minority representation. The new redistricting map isn't due at the Justice Department until January of next year. However, with your setting an arbitrary deadline, you had a great excuse to push it through with minimal voter input. Lastly, this is the Constitution of the United States of America. I allege that you have grossly violated it along with the majority of the city council, and we must therefore have a mayoral recall election to get all the allegations out in the open to stop the special interest agenda and the anti-We the People agenda, which you so obviously want to push forward. Such an agenda will continue to degrade, will diminish the quality of life for most of Dallas residents, and possibly lead to race wars in Dallas. Thank you very much. May God save Dallas.
Thank you, Mr. Sheridan.
Your next speaker is William Hopkins, not present. Gwen Wooten is not present. Jada Wooten, not present. That concludes your speakers, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Hunt?
Thank you, Ms. Mayor. To the city manager's office, I noticed on the last page of the schedule, I think, and I hope it was just an oversight, the Quality of Life Committee has been left off of the report out time. Von Steele says it was intentional. Von Steele says it was intentional. So.
Whatever she says.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, you... Well,
We
will be hearing...
Yeah, thanks, Stacey. That's really generous of you to check in.
We will be hearing from the Quality of Life.
Thank you, Mr.
Meeting adjourned. Thank you.
Meeting adjourned at 11:57. Okay, hold on.